Was your champagne flute half empty or half full when you rung in the new year? We'll be going through the reasons both why the Packers will win the Super Bowl and why they won't with Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog here at Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu, joined by our live blog director, Jamie Stone, along with Alex Talich. We're talking some Packers football. Happy New Year, everyone. We're looking forward to a Packers playoff game next week. Of course, the Packers clinched a bye and won't be playing in the wild card round. But we'll be talking Packers playoffs with our guest on the line as he does the first Friday of every month, Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog. Scott, how was your new year?
Terrific, Brian. Got to see some string cheese, enjoy some music, and watch a great day of college football yesterday.
So, yes, yes.
Good, man.
Just briefly, you know, on college football, because it was such a big day yesterday. The Big Ten wins three games. The number one seed Alabama gets knocked off in the first playoffs. You know, I had... They have those bowl confidence pools where you rank the winners based upon, you know, how likely they are to win. And I had both Auburn and Alabama darn near the top. I mean, what was your reaction to seeing those two teams, the SEC in general, have a bad day? What's going on in college football?
It was a real fun day to be a fan of the Big Ten yesterday. We kind of woke ourselves up a little bit, and the ball bounced our way when it hit the crossbar in the Wisconsin game. And, you really saw that momentum is a thing in college football in the Ohio State-Alabama game towards the end of the first half, and it just didn't seem like Alabama was able to get their train on the tracks to make a comeback there. But it never really gained the momentum. And I think that this version of Ohio State has a different level of athleticism than we've seen in past Big Ten teams, and I think the Badgers with Gordon, he's maybe the elite athlete in all of college football, and those are a couple of things that I think that has allowed the Big Ten this year to match up with other teams better than they have in past years.
Yeah, it was a fun day of college football yesterday on New Year's Day. Of course, we're here to talk Packers football on this podcast, and we'll do that. We actually have an extra long episode for you. We're going till 9:15 a.m. after taking a couple episodes off during the holidays. We're back, and back with a vengeance here. What we're going to do this episode is we're going to run through the Packers position by position and give you both reasons for optimism and reasons for pessimism, why the Packers will win the Super Bowl or why they won't. So let's get right down to it. I think this will be a fun episode going position by position. Scott, you're going to start with the offense, and he's going to give you the reasons for optimism. I'm going to play the pessimist here. But first of all, let's start, of course, with the quarterback position. Scott, your reason for optimism, why the Packers will win it all.
He's the league MVP. And he's right now, writing his story as to why he will be considered one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. Playing through pain, the leader, he's cerebral, he's as accurate as any quarterback this league has ever seen. He's using all of his weapons and all of his tools. And, you know, even with the banged up calf last week, they're running for a first down late in the first half, extending a play, and then even on the play where he did get banged up, still throwing a touchdown there. We're seeing a different type of courage, a different type of grit, a different level of play at the quarterback position than we've seen in Green Bay in a while, and that is saying a lot. And you know, I think that he's primed to go on another classic January run that will etch his name in the history as one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play this game.
Just to play devil's advocate, is he the league's MVP? Because I know J.J. Watt is kind of getting ahead of steam, and there's a lot of people in his corner kind of being the underdog, being that there's never a defensive player, hardly ever, that wins the MVP, given that he had a historic season. Is Aaron Rodgers the MVP?
By my terms, when I look at most valuable player, and I look at this year's Packers team, we're 12-4, first round by, two seed in the NFC with Aaron Rodgers. Without Aaron Rodgers, this team might be 5-11, 6-10. You know, I he's had the ball in his hands every play, you know, for the majority of the year, and good things have happened. He's had a fairly historic year. With only 5 interceptions, and you can make an argument that he could have only had one or two based on if players catch the football. But in my eyes, there's no doubt that he's the MVP, and he put the team on his back with the relaxed comment earlier in the year when I think there were a lot of people close to pushing the panic button. And I think he showed that he is the best player in the NFL, to my eye, this year.
There always is kind of that argument with the MVP award. Do you take it literally, and does it mean most valuable, or does it mean the most outstanding player? There is always kind of that push and pull there. So I'm supposed to play the pessimist here, the glass half empty kind of guy. And I think your reason for pessimism, the reason the Packers won't win the Super Bowl at the quarterback position, I think is a no-brainer here. And it has to do with this calf injury that actually happened before the Packers' regular season finale. Rears its ugly head when Rodgers kind of aggravates it against the Detroit Lions. Is rather immobile. I guess, you know, I don't know if I totally believe myself here, but playing the, you know, devil's advocate, I can see Aaron Rodgers not having that mobility, not having that escapability, and sure, I could see him winning at home in the playoffs and getting by with it, but all of a sudden, you got to go to Seattle or in the Super Bowl, and all of a sudden you're playing a different caliber of defense, a better team, that it's going to come back and bite him at some point. What's your level of concern, Scott, with the calf injury?
Hoping that with a week's worth of rest, you know, he's going to be able to see somewhat of a bounce back there. And, you know, I think you make a valid point that the road isn't going to be easy. It never is to win the Super Bowl. But, you know, with the way the offensive line is playing and protecting, and we'll touch on that in a bit here, hopefully he's going to be able to not only have a week worth of rest, but we can hopefully keep him upright for a week after that. And then the next thing you know, he's had three solid weeks of not getting hit much and in a position to go take on Seattle in Seattle or hosting somebody like Detroit in an NFC championship game. So, you know, that'd be my outlook on it. I'm not overly concerned, and as I said earlier, I really feel like that's just that injury is just another thing to provide motivation to a guy like Aaron Rodgers, who seems to be wired by the old chip on his shoulder to prove people wrong. And I think toughness has never been something that, you know, I think people have questioned about him. But this is also maybe the first time that we've been in a crucial stage. I guess last year the same thing, when he was in a crucial stage with the injury, came back, made a big play in the fourth quarter at Chicago, and then we see the same thing, you know, last week in week 17 against Detroit, playing tough, playing with pain, and showing that he really is the leader that he is.
I certainly hope Aaron Rodgers is healthy. I guess given your options, I suppose a calf injury is maybe something you can deal with as opposed to a broken collarbone, which he had for several weeks last year. Maybe the week off helps. I certainly hope it does. I mean, it can't hurt rather than playing this weekend. The Packers get some time off for rest, and we'll continue to monitor the situation as time goes on. Moving on to the running backs, Scott, your reason for optimism at the running back position, why the Packers will win it all.
Since Eddie Lacy's joined the Packers, it feels like the locker room has just become a tougher environment. It's become a more physical environment. I think it's spread across the entire wealth of the offense. And, you know, people are more aggressive to punch people in the mouth and to take additional yards after catch. Or, you know, I think that you're seeing the combination of both Lacy and Starks make us a more fertile running team down the stretch and when the weather, you know, turns to cold, when you need to have maybe more balance. And I really feel like Eddie Lacy has given the Packers a running impact that we just haven't seen in a long while, over 1,000 yards back-to-back years. But he's doing it out of you know, sheer power and force. And it's almost a turn back the clock type era for the Packers running the football and, you know, just lining it up and almost, you know, just punching people. And because of that, I believe that the running game gives the offense a great balance. It allows for Rodgers to make a variety of checks at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, if I'm Rodgers and I've got the versatility at the offensive line or at the offense to be able to, you know, provide a variety of options as to what you want to call at the line of scrimmage, and he's got great flexibility there. You know, you got to be walking to the line of scrimmage with great confidence, knowing that you got a guy like Lacy behind you who's going to be fighting every single play. Additionally, something that I don't think is discussed as much as maybe as it should be is the pass protection. You know, Lacy, his pass protection throughout the year has just been, it's been top shelf. And I think he's been a stalwart there as being able to allow, you know, Corliss to be able to get outside, you know, Richard Rodgers to be able to line out outside as we've seen a little bit more recently. And, you know, I think he's just added an extra almost lineman there as far as a protection is concerned. And then additionally, Lacy's really shown great hands, and he's become a real valid option out of the backfield as a receiver. And you know, just can't say enough about the addition that Lacy has made to the offense as a whole. And I think he makes us real prime for cold weather football.
Now, if you think you're spoiled with Aaron Rodgers, it's becoming the same way, I think, with Eddie Lacy. I go back to thinking what the running back position was like pre-2013, and boy, I was fretting for years about the lack of quality players at the running back position. The Packers won a Super Bowl in spite of their running backs back in 2010 when, you know, Brandon Jackson and company were your running backs. It's amazing how much better the Packers are with Eddie Lacy now. But to play the pessimist role, I the glass half empty here with the running back position, the reason I think the Packers won't win the Super Bowl actually has part to do with Aaron Rodgers' health again and the play calling that results from it. Of course, if he's limited, the Packers are going to be going in the shotgun a lot of the time during the playoffs here. And when you do that, you can't get ahead of steam if you're a running back. Well, you can, and I'll get to that in a second. But, you know, you see those where the running back is, you know, lined up right next to the quarterback. He hands the ball to Eddie Lacy. He's not running downhill. In addition to that, I still see more dives from John Kuhn than I'm comfortable with. I'm not a person who says John Kuhn can't touch the ball. But boy, I wish the times John Kuhn did were almost strictly in 4-minute situations where they're trying to milk the clock or when they're, you know, 14 points ahead already rather than crucial, you know, situations. So I think it's the play calling from the running back position that concerns me, albeit I will say this, I did like the introduction of the pistol formation the Packers have been running more of late. That does give the running back a little bit more of downhill momentum when the Packers do have to run out of the shotgun. Your thoughts, Scott, on the play calling of the Packers in their running game?
Well, it was obviously concerning when they had first and goal from the one, and Lacy didn't step on the field until it was fourth down.
Exactly.
And on first down, I think we were handing it off to Kuhn. But to get down there, I think it's noteworthy that I think every yard was gained by either penalty or the run.
Yep.
And and Lacy was really bowling forward and using the old adage that we've seen in the media of tackling Lacy is a business decision for defensive backs. And we certainly saw that where he was carrying defenders for multiple yards after contact. But it was absolutely concerning when we had first and goal from the one and Lacy wasn't even on the field. That it was almost like we outthought ourselves there.
Yeah, that was just baffling to me how you don't run him on first or second down. That's when he should be on the field, especially, again, in a critical situation. Hey, if the Packers are up by two touchdowns already, sure, go ahead, put in James Starks or run John Kuhn, but not when the game's still in question. All right, moving on to wide receivers. Scott, your reasons for optimism, the Packers will win it all.
Well, I think we had a historic season from both Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb as a duo at wide receiver, and that they speak for themselves. They're great complementary receivers. Nelson on the outside, who can move into the slot, and Cobb in the slot, who can move to the outside. And that 1-2 combination is as good as any 1-2 wide receiver combination as there is in the NFL. Additionally, I'm really hoping that Devontae Adams, he kind of breaks out of the mini, I don't want to call it a slump, but he's in a funk maybe. Ever since he dropped that slant pass to the against the Patriots, it seems like he's maybe lost just a hair of focus or confidence or whatever it may be. But with that being said, I'm really hoping the bye gets his legs recharged and refreshed and, maybe helps him push through the old rookie wall that you sometimes hear about. But when Adams was in midseason stride and we had those three wide receivers who all have similar talents to being able to make plays after the catch, great route runners, and really nice hands, I really thought the Packers were just almost indefensible. I thought, unless somebody had four really, really solid players who could cover on the outside, I think you need to give attention to either Corliss or Rogers at tight end as well. So hoping that the bye helped recharge Adams and got him refocused, and I think that Nelson and Cobb are just beyond exceptional.
Yeah, you kind of stole my thunder a little bit, and the reason for pessimism has to do with, I think, the confidence in Devontae Adams. I think it goes both ways. You're right. Ever since that drop in the Patriots game, the last few weeks of the season, I think Adams has both lost confidence in himself and likewise Aaron Rodgers losing confidence a little bit in Devontae Adams. He did not have a single catch the last game of the year against the Lions, and of course he dropped the two against the Bucks the game prior, including a big one over the middle there. That was kind of, you could argue that he got jarred there, that knocked it out, and that was a tough catch. But still, trending the wrong way at this time of year. And to add one more thing, of course, Jarrett Boykin goes from 40-some catches in 2013 to single-digit catches in 2014. How much of a disappointment has Jarrett Boykin been this year?
Before the year, I thought that Boykin was primed to have a 60-catch season, and he was going to be the guy that got a big contract at the end of the year. Somebody like Jacksonville might take him back and pay him a bunch of money, and the Packers end up getting a fourth or a fifth round compensatory pick the following year.
Would have been nice.
Yeah, it would have. And now, right, this year it's almost like you don't recognize him. His posture doesn't seem the same. He doesn't seem to be connecting with Rodgers and maybe with himself on the field. And he's a great talent, and when he's been able to make plays, in past years, last year, he was just I mean, I remember the game against, in the Matt Flynn comeback game against Minnesota where we tied him. I mean, Boykin looked like he had big time potential attached to his name, and for whatever reason, just haven't seen it this year. And he maybe got beat out by Adams and just never was able to mentally recharge himself after that. But definitely a disappointment.
Well, continue with the tight ends here. Reason for optimism.
I think that Richard Rodgers has done almost the exact opposite thing that Adams has done.
Yeah, he
He's
has.
really improved, and I think Aaron Rodgers has really gained a lot of confidence in Richard Rodgers, and he's turned to him. He's looking to him as an outlet. And anytime he can just sort of play catch like he does in the backyard with the tight end, a big body that you can just dump it off to as an escape, and you can get 4 to 6 yards as we've done with Richard Rodgers as of late. That can be very exciting. Additionally, Corliss just seems to make a big play every single week these days, and a lot of them are on third downs. And there was a real nice stretch in November and into December where it seemed like Corliss was becoming a go-to guy for Rodgers on third downs over the middle and in tough situations. And I think that was that was really a turning point for Corliss this year in helping the Packers really blow teams away at big points in games. And with that being said, we've seen an element of Corliss's game this year that I don't think we had seen much previously, with the exception of the Dallas game last year. So I would point to those two as people who are trending upward. And then additionally, it's just I can't get it out of my head that there won't be one point at some point this year where the Packers take a shot down the middle of the field to Bostic if the guy can ever stay healthy. And he's really a mismatch problem. He's got the speed, he's got the length, he does have decent hands, where you just send him on one of those go routes that we used to see Keith Jackson run down the middle of the field, and that there could be a big play waiting in the wings there. And I still haven't given up hope that that's a possibility for this season.
So you talked a lot about the Packers tight ends in the receiving game. My reason for pessimism has to do more with the running game. And for as good as Richard Rodgers has developed as a receiver, he has stagnated all year as a blocker. Corliss, I think he gives good effort, but he's never been the same since the injury. Richard Rodgers has struggled all year long blocking for the running game. And what I will say is, I wonder, why did he bulk up to 270 pounds? Does Richard Rodgers really need to be that big? He was a wide receiver when he was with Cal and definitely wasn't that heavy. Not to say he's got to drop 50 pounds or anything here, but I mean, why is he carrying 270 pounds when I don't think he's a good blocker? I don't know if he'll ever be a good blocker, but I do think he can be effective as a receiver. Does Richard Rodgers need to be 270 pounds?
I don't know that I know the answer to that, but what I will say is that he's clearly a work in progress as a blocker. And earlier in the year, he could have been labeled as a poor blocker in my eyes. But he has grown some. I think he's learned as they've used him in the backfield some as a lead blocker. I think he's learned to see holes better that way. And with that being said, maybe he will need that weight to develop into the blocker that the Packers want him to become. They've really used him in a wide variety of ways as of late. In the backfield, tight against the tackle, and then some to the outside as well. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch in the off season as they see or they really try to figure out what role they're going to try to play him in next year.
Offensive line, your reason for optimism. I don't think you
When
have to
this
reach here either.
starting five is healthy, it is we are super, and there's no doubt about it. You look at the losses this year, and man, it's Seattle Bulaga got hurt, Lane gets hurt against New Orleans, Bulaga gets hurt against Buffalo. Bulaga just coming back against Detroit the first time. And when this offensive line, this starting five is healthy, we're going to be really, really tough to beat.
You made that quick.
It's easy. It's easy.
Yeah, I mean,
You
these
know?
guys are playing so well right now. In fact, I'm grasping for a reason for pessimism here, that these guys have just played so well, particularly since the bye week. And a lot of it has to do these, with the exception of what was it, one game early in the year when Brian Bulaga sat out for injury. They've been, the same group all season long. I think they're gaining coalescence. They're just gaining momentum and carrying into the postseason. So here's my reason for pessimism here. And it's perhaps rather flimsy, and maybe it has to do with same thing as Devontae Adams. I'm worried that Corey Linsley might hit that proverbial rookie wall, and I know he hasn't played poorly by any means. The past 2 weeks, though, week 16 and 17 of the season, he received a negative grade by ProFootballFocus.com, and it really didn't have anything to do with his pass blocking, which is good. It had more to do with his run blocking, and he's had penalties in each of the past two games. He had that silly false start penalty last week. Any chance that Corey Linsley hits the rookie wall?
I'm not concerned about it. In fact, I loved the holding call that he had 2 weeks ago against Tampa when he pancaked the guy. I don't know what how that was a penalty in my eyes, but he brings a natural leadership trait to him, I think, where he just wants to fit in, and he really has been tough. There's been great continuity, I feel, between him and Rodgers since day one. And he seems like he's the type of guy that'll be mentally fit to push through whether he needs to play, 16 games in a year or 19 games in a year. He's not one that I would be worried about.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not even sure I believe myself here. And, the fact that last week they had to protect Aaron Rodgers to a T, and they did, not giving up a single sack when Rodgers was in the game. Wow. I mean, that was really a work of art. We're going to flip roles here on the defensive side of the football. I'm going to give the reasons for optimism. Scott's going to give the reasons for pessimism. And starting with the defensive line here in the trenches, I'll say this. I like Dayton Jones seeming to get better and better the further removed from ankle injury he is. I think he's getting better as a pass rusher. And on top of that, I like the rotation basically with him and Josh Boyd, where Boyd is playing basically in running situations that fit his strengths, and Dayton Jones is coming into the game in passing situations that fit his strengths. So I think that's a reason that the Packers are sitting pretty with the defensive line.
I would say that, and this is not in my DNA to talk like this, but I'm going to do my best for the purpose of
Okay.
this conversation, right? But I'm going to say that the consistency of the defensive line from a pass rushing perspective, outside of Mike Daniels, has been very questionable. And I can agree with you where Dayton Jones has improved. He's showing good quickness off the ball. But the consistency on him, I mean, he's not getting home,
Yeah.
and I think there's a big difference from a guy getting pressure and a guy getting home. Additionally, what I'll say is when people aren't getting home, they're not getting their arms in the air. And I look at that last drive where the first half for Detroit, and I really felt like if we went in with a 14-0 lead at the half, and of course the Brad Jones penalty continued or continued the drive. And with that being said, the entire drive, all we needed was one big play by the defensive line, and I really felt it could have shifted the momentum to where we just went into the half 14-0. Rodgers then maybe comes out to start the second half. I don't know, but might have been a different vibe. But I really felt that the consistency of our defensive line being able to get pressure on the quarterback. Is just been it hasn't been there, and you look at the month of December, Atlanta we couldn't get to Matt Ryan, Buffalo we struggled to get to Orton, had a great game getting to the quarterback against Tampa Bay, but we came with a lot of pressure and, you know, brought people in masses and were able to because we thought we were expecting run. And then last week against Detroit, you know, Clay had the big sack, and I know Mike Daniels really had a great game, he's just another gem that we've got on this roster. But outside of him, I don't know, there just hasn't been a lot of pass rush there, and I think when you look at the people we may have to play, we're going to have to get to the quarterback in order to be successful. And additionally, we're going to have to be able to stop the run. And I think the biggest fear that I have with this team going into the Super Bowl, and I'll touch on this a little bit when we talk about the inside linebackers or the linebackers as a whole, is if a team stays committed and absolutely consistent to running the football and they stay patient, can we stop Dallas running the football? Can we stop Seattle running the football? Guyana has played really well when we've played the average football teams. But when we have to go play the Seattles or the Dallases or those teams that really make a living, punching you and running right at your gut, will we be able to stop the run? And that, I think, is the biggest question mark that surrounds this football team, and it's founded by the defensive line.
All right, getting to the linebackers. Rather than give my reason for, why the Packers will win it all or my reason for optimism, I'll kind of take this in a different direction, and I would be optimistic if the Packers played Clay Matthews at inside linebacker in the dime package. And what's interesting is Clay Matthews was the Packers' dime linebacker for, I believe, one game. And if I'm correct, I think it was the second game of the year against the Minnesota Vikings, just after the bye there. We're talking early November, I think, something like that. And I'm not sure why they ever got away from it. Well, I guess I know why is they want him still rushing the passer off the edge. But I'll tell you what, of course, as we saw last week, Brad Jones, when he's on the field, I don't think anybody's really confident. I would rather see, I like Clay Matthews as a pass rusher, but I would rather see him in the dime as an inside linebacker and giving Nick Perry and Mike Neal a shot instead of rushing the passer. I think there's a better chance they're going to succeed than Brad Jones is going to succeed. So that's why I see it. That would give me optimism if Clay Matthews was the dime linebacker. Your thoughts on that, but then by all means, go ahead and get into your reasons for optimism as well.
Yeah, I think
pessimism.
I hear you. It's I would agree with that. For whatever reason, over the last couple of weeks, they've moved Clay more to the outside and kind of got away from a lot of the things that we were doing really well. And can't complain because we haven't given up a bunch of points. But with that being said, I feel like teams just haven't stayed committed to running the football. And when they have, you look at where Hawk's making his tackles, it's 5 to 9 yards down the field. And, when you had Barrington and Matthews there in the middle of the field, there seemed to be a good – they seemed to complement one another pretty well. And additionally, when Matthews is on the outside in first and second down, because of who he is as a pursuer, he leaves that gap between the tackle and the guard wide open. And we just don't have the speed at inside linebacker to be able to get to the outside and make the tackle there. So it's almost consistently a 3 to 10 yard gain there. And it's just, that for me has been a real source of confusion for me is, the defense looked like they were really progressing from a run-stopping perspective and being able to put, Perry on that side and just having him collapse the pocket and having Matthews being an instinctive attacking roamer to go try and find the football and to come around the edge and, make a bunch of big plays then from swinging from the inside to the out. Because Matthews has been on the outside that has led to sources of confusion. And if you were, you know, use the word pessimism as the, you know, how somebody could really attack us there. Hoping it was just a little bump on the radar and that they'll come back to Massey's on the inside. And then I'd agree, for the playoffs. And I'd also agree that, you know, when Brad Jones comes on the field at the dime, I just don't understand. It seems like there isn't much positive that happens. I've been begging for Sean Richardson to play that role. I really think he would be the best answer that we've got in the team, because if we're honest with ourselves and we say, well, Clay Matthews is best position on third down is as a pass rusher, I do think he's a great option at the dime, and I like when they had him there. But in playoff football, on third down, you need to get to the quarterback. And I think with Peppers and Matthews and, you can interchange the people on the inside, we're going to get home often, and we're going to be able to get pressure with four often. And but with that being said, Brad Jones isn't the answer at the dime on the inside. But other than Sean Richardson, I don't know who else you can play there, you know, because Jones can't do it. Barrington can't do it. Lattimore is no longer on the roster due to the IR. He's on the IR, so I don't know who you'd play there.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they've carved out a small role for Sean Richardson, seemingly in, like, I don't know. They do it whenever a team is backed up on their own goal line. I don't know what you call that package. Maybe it's the same as their, you know, short yardage packages, but I don't know. I guess that leads us at least into a discussion of the secondary. Reasons why I'm hopeful here the Packers will win it all is that they've generally played well without Devon House the past 2 weeks. I thought he would be so important against the Detroit Lions and the way he matches up with a little more length with Megatron, with Calvin Johnson there. But the Packers really, they played well without him. Sam Shields and Tremont Williams did their job. Sam Shields gave up a few completions. I mean, every cornerback does, but they didn't get beat deep. They didn't, you know, allow the Lions wide receivers to kill them. So that really gives me optimism that the Packers will continue to play well, and it'll even be better if Devon House gets healthy and he's able to contribute. You know, they're a better team with him healthy than they are with him hurt. And just, you know, we've talked about this before, probably the last time we talked about the secondary. I still would rather see Casey Hayward as the nickelback and Micah Hyde as the dimeback. It's kind of been flip-flopped that Hyde has been the nickel and Hayward the dime. I'd like to see Casey Hayward out there in more situations. You saw it again last week. He comes up with that big, you know, pass breakup. Could have been an interception. I think he's playing well.
Hear it. And I would say that my reasons for pessimism is where the big plays go. We haven't been forcing the turnovers. Mm-hmm. And I do think that there still is a vulnerability over the top. As much good as, Clinton Dix, what a great addition. Mm-hmm. And but with that being said, he can get beat over the top, it feels like. It seems like he's late, and there's been some miscommunication between him and Shields at times. The play to Vincent Jackson was one instance, 2 weeks ago on the deep pass. But it's felt like there's been chances to be able to hit us over the top deep down the sidelines. You look at the game that Julio Jones had, mm-hmm. and then you start thinking about having to potentially play Dez Bryant in 2 weeks or next week, and it's just. He could have a similar type of day. And, that big, long, speedy receiver can really cause damage down the sidelines against us. It seems like we're late to get there from the safety position. And I'm not 100% comfortable with the confidence in the communication that's happening between safeties and cornerbacks on those deep balls. So those would be the two things, the turnovers and then the threat of the deep ball. Are two things that I am not 100% comfortable with from our secondary. But as you know, and I've said together, you know, when we talk on this this show, once a month, I love the seasoned veterans, Shields, in Williams and the way that they bring it in playoff football.
Yeah.
And I do have confidence that we're in a good space there, heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Sam Shields and Tremont Williams in the playoffs have been masterful at times. I thought you'd go with the missed tackles by Clinton Dix. It seems like that's happening a little bit too much. He dips the head, and guys get by him. All things considered, I guess it's something rather small, but you'd like to see improvement by Clinton Dix in that area. We're running out of time here, Scott. Before we let you go, just thoughts in general. I don't know. There's almost seems to be nothing but pessimism about the Packers special teams. Thought on Packers special teams? Will they come back to bite them in the playoffs?
Well, I will say that let me give a little optimism here. Micah Hyde as a returner has become a thing. He's he's been the real deal. And that's been a big surprise to me. But Micah Hyde he's just crafted with goodness. He's just a football player, as Ted Thompson likes to say. But I will say that I've got confidence in our punt return unit, our punt coverage unit. There's some cause for concern there. Kickoff coverage unit, there's cause for concern there. And then I don't know what's. I'm afraid to comment on what's happening with our field goal kicking unit and our, I just don't understand, but it's like you're biting your fingernails every time they line up it's almost as good of a shot that it's going to get blocked as it's going to be made, which is almost unheard of these days. But, it seems like once a week there's a breakdown in the unit there and it just doesn't work out. And I don't know how they can get that fixed, frankly.
I guess piggybacking on, I suppose, reasons for optimism. I do like that Mason Crosby, I believe the stat is he's connected on 27 of 30 field goals that haven't been blocked. The blocks are a concern, but if they're not being blocked, Mason Crosby, again, had another very good season. And on top of that, I love the decision the Packers made finally. Took till week 17, but they took DeJuan Harris out of the kick return role. He was last among qualified returners in kick return average. They put Hyde back there. Apparently, they didn't have many opportunities for kick returns last week, but apparently Randall Cobb is going to share time with them. I do like those guys back there better than DeJuan Harris.
Fully agree. 100% agree. And we've seen Hyde, over the last 2 years, just really make a number of big plays as a returner. And I think he's trustworthy. Anytime he can get the ball in his hands, it's a good thing.
Three
so,
touchdowns.
I would agree there.
Three
yep.
touchdowns in the past 2 years from Micah Hyde. That's special from a punt returner. Scott, I know you got to go. Thanks again, as always, for joining us here on Railbird Central. And hopefully, by the time we talk to you again next month, we'll be talking about that Super Bowl.
Go Pack, go Brian, and great vibes to you.
All right. Take care. Scott McKenna, the Talkin' Smack Blog, joining us here on Railbird Central as he does the first Friday of every month. Glad to have him join us. Glad to have you, the listener, join us on an extra long edition of Railbird Central here on a Friday after missing a few episodes during the holidays. I know I was traveling, couldn't always make it, but glad you're back listening. I know we're sitting here on a Friday morning, the day after New Year's Day. I'm not sure our listenership is as high as it usually is on the show, at least the live edition. Hopefully a lot of you are picking up the podcasted edition instead. The one thing with it, here we are the day after a holiday. I think this is appropriate just to close the show here with our...
The day ahead.
At 1265 Lombardi Avenue, the Packers get back to work on Friday. Players had off both Wednesday and Thursday. The biggest reason is, of course, the Packers clinched a bye, so they're just getting some time to rest. But it happened to coincide with the holiday, and Mike McCarthy always talks about how important it is to, give some time off to the players during the holidays so they can be with family and things like that. But I think appropriately here, Mike McCarthy said, this is not, time to be a mini vacation, really. This wasn't a time for players to go out and go to their hometowns necessarily. during the bye week. And here's what he had to say, his last press conference, which I think now dates back to Monday. Mike McCarthy said this, but here he is talking about the post-break years, the Packers get back to work.
No, it's a little different. I think this is a kind of, this is a time to, you know, obviously step away from it, you know, and, you know, just enjoy what you accomplished. I understand the, you know, we have the holiday here, was that Wednesday and Thursday. So, you know, hydration testing on Friday morning will be the first thing we do. So, we'll stay on top of our business.
And there you go. Hydration testing this morning at 1265 Lombardi Avenue. Mike McCarthy making sure his players haven't imbibed too much during the new year, ringing it in and enjoyed themselves a little bit too much. There's still work ahead to be done, as you can see here. So kind of a lighthearted moment from Mike McCarthy. I thought that was funny here, being a day after New Year and saying there's hydration testing. I don't know what hydration testing does necessarily. I've never done it myself. I'd like to know what's all involved with that. But anyway, thank you everybody so much for joining us here at Railbird Central, folks. Happy New Year to you. Wish you all the best in 2015 as we ring in the new year. We'll get into it more next week. We'll be back on Monday for another episode of Railbird Central. We'll know the Packers' opponents by then. So enjoy your weekend, folks. Enjoy the wild card round of football games. And then, you know, let's talk about these Packers' new playoff opponent next week then. So we'll see you on Monday, 8:30 a.m. Central Time, every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, the live edition of Railbird Central. I'm glad to have you who listen to the podcast as well. We'll see you later, folks. I leave you today with a song called Break, Build, Burn by Lotus on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.